The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Gates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. Well, we're here. It is
here.
NFL draft week. It is finally here. It is funny. You know, they always say like time goes by fast, but it actually didn't really go by that fast for me. But it is interesting that, you know, you can start to feel that energy slowly but surely in the city. And, you know, been by Lambeau a few times, saw the stage put up, the fences put up. It's going to be very fascinating what entails this week. And I just want to start with you guys that, you know, have some time in here from going on 12 years and 30 plus. And I'll start with you, Spoon. Just, I guess what this is 9 years in the making of getting this draft to Green Bay. So just someone that has been around here for so long, just, you know, what are your thoughts on just seeing this come to fruition, the league's smallest city is going to have one of the largest events in the NFL with the draft? Just, you know, what are your thoughts on getting ready for this week?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It was kind of a behind the scenes type of thing. So, you know, you would hear about it to some degree, but it wasn't really a real thing. It wasn't, you know, hours of prep and tons of, you know, publicity about it coming to Green Bay or the possibility of it coming to be Green Bay. Every year you'd hear a little something about it. And then even when they got it, it was, well, you know, what is it going to be? I don't know. And then you didn't hear about it really for 6 months. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, now they're taking over the city, at least the Ashwaubenon area, to build this thing. You know, there's like 2,000 people here to build this stage and put everything together and run everything. So it is a big operation, and it's sort of interesting. I mean, if you've covered the NFL, you know how this works, because like if you've been to a Super Bowl or the Combine or whatever event, the NFL is like a wartime, you know, organization where they can put up a factory in like 5 minutes, you know, or whatever they got to do to move something. They just bring people in, bam, okay, they're on to the next event or whatever. So we're kind of seeing that, and we've seen it before in other places, but now it's in Green Bay, and it's a big pain in the butt for people to have to drive around.
Yeah, go ahead, Ryan. Just what, you know, what are your feelings on this?
Spoon, if you could go back when we were hearing those rumblings a few years ago, right? And without revisionist history, and I promise to do the same, were you in the camp? Did you think that it was realistic that this could happen? Or were you in the camp of, oh, there's just no way?
I always thought it would depend on hotel rooms. Like, I was certain they would want to do it here. It'd be fine. I mean, the weather would be a question mark. But do they have the hotel rooms? And I mean, that's always been the question for anything that would be in Green Bay. And apparently they do. So now I know, you know, a lot of people are staying in Milwaukee and Madison and surrounding areas. But apparently they do have enough now. I'm sure it's different from when I first started on the beat and there were about five hotels in the city, you know. So once you saw that, then I thought, yeah, okay, they're probably going to do it. You know,
I never thought this would happen. You put hit me back a few years ago for that reason. Where are they going to put the people? That was my thought. Like, I'm sure they want to. And yes, it would be really cool. It would be really cool for the event, for the draft, to couple the biggest offseason event in the NFL with the smallest market, the most iconic stadium, which, let's be very clear, Lambeau Field is why the draft is here. It's a made-for-TV event. On TV, it would look great. I never questioned any of that. Where were they putting the people? I never thought this was going to happen. I was shocked. I wasn't just surprised. I was shocked when the NFL sent the 2025 draft to Green Bay. But as it's gotten closer, it's made more sense, right? One, they have the hotel space. Now, I think that projected 250,000 people, first of all, it's over 3 days. Secondly, if I'm going to count for three people because I'm going to be there 3 days, right? We're all going to count here for three. So that how much in a single day will be interesting. I think the other thing that'll be very interesting is of that 250,000, how many are locals? How many are coming here? How many hotel rooms are they actually using? Because I think it's going to be a massive, massive local draw. No surprise. This is Green Bay. This is football country. They hold 80,000 eight to nine Sundays each fall. They know how to put on those kind of events. I think the getting into the numbers will be very interesting after the event. But you know, I've told people, Spoon, you know this too. I've been to almost every single NFL stadium on game day. The only one I haven't been to is Houston. Green Bay is about the best it gets to game day traffic. The way that it's like clockwork, the way they get people in and out. They just have this whole idea of residential parking and bringing the city together to host a lot of people down to a science. So those things are certainly working in their favor. You know, where I live, it's right next to Lambeau Field. I mean, it's a couple miles, and I drive past it every day. So March 29th, when Oneida Street was first closed for construction, I was in Florida at the NFL owners meeting. As soon as I got back, you could see it, and it's amazing how quickly this stage, it weighs 2 million pounds in equipment. It holds 300,000 pounds for what they need for the show of equipment. It's 290 feet wide, it's 170 feet deep, and it's almost 100 feet tall at its highest in a city that's not known for major structures. Let's be real. It's amazing how quickly they built this thing, and the concept was there, and now just you sit back and the draft's going to happen.
Yeah, foundation is laid. We'll see how it is executed because you brought up a great point about parking. I was shocked when I first got here for that home opener. I got to the stadium like 5 hours in advance thinking traffic is going to be crazy, but it's just like a conveyor belt. They get it rolling and it's always very smooth. So you're going to add a little bit more to that coming up this week. So
quick story on that. So I met with the representatives for C3 Presents, which is a production company that produces the draft every year with the NFL. Mm-hmm. And Brian Trujillo, who is the director of operations, came to his first Packers game last November. It was when the Packers dismantled the 49ers in what was a really bad weather game. And he you know, watched the game, but before he drove around and he just got a feel for the landscape, knowing that, hey, you're going to have to put this event at the campus, the draft campus, give you a idea of the scale, is going to consume about 70 football fields of space. This massive event. How do you fit everything in? And the thing that stood out to him was how everyone's yards around Lambeau Field turned into parking lots, how many cars they got in there. It's like, it's very different. There's not major parking, except they turn the city into major parking. So that's how they roll in Green Bay. It's just what they do here.
It makes sense. So now that we start to dive deeper and talk more about the upcoming draft, and before we dive into that, we do want to talk about a Packers GM, Brian Gutekunst. He talked on Monday. Before we kind of break down some of those comments that he made, I have to go up to Spoon, because for everyone that hasn't read this yet, please get online, head to Journal Sentinel. Just be sure you read this. Did an outstanding job. Spoon hates when we compliment him, so I'm doing it right now for everyone to listen to.
I have to go to the bathroom. I'll be right
back. Right. I'm going to say, if you watch Inside the NBA, you're going to have your Shaq moment leaving to go to the bathroom. But it was just a really, really good content in there, and you kind of broke down what Gutekunst saw when he first saw Jordan Love. So can you just kind of take me through what it was like just constructing that story, and just what were your takeaways from what Gutekunst said and what he saw in Jordan Love?
Yeah, so the idea kind of came from many years ago when Ron Wolf was the general manager, I asked him, could I sit in and watch you break down a player on film? I won't identify who the player is, but I'll just, you know, watch you and write your comments and what you're looking at. And he was like, yeah, sure. And so I did that. I mean, it was like some fourth round guy I did. I don't even remember who it is now. So I remember doing that and I thought, okay, I'm going to work on Gutekunst and see if for some hot reason he might do it. And, you know, so it was with a lot of negotiation, you know, about how we would do it. He finally agreed. And I think, you know, I think the reason, basically what I asked him was, let's go over Jordan Love's tape and you tell me what it was that you really liked about Jordan Love when you drafted him. What made you draft him? And I think probably beneficial to him to get his viewpoint out there about why they believe in him and maybe get people to understand why they drafted him. I'm guessing that's part of his motivation. I mean, I know what my motivation was. I wanted to write a story. So yeah, he agreed and they took me into the draft room. It was just me and him and the PR director, Jason Wallers. And, you know, their board is up there and it's massive. So this is a massive, it's like a hotel ballroom is how I described it. This is a new facility. They built it 2 years ago. And it's got these huge video screens, like 50 foot long horizontal video screens. And they can call up any play from whatever. Gutekunst has it, right? He's got like the pilot seat in the middle of the room and he can call up whatever he wants. And one side of the wall had every one of Love's statistics, like from Utah State. And it went across the whole wall. I don't know what they had in it. The other photo had his Wunderlich score. It had his athletic testing scores, psychological scores, hand size, arm. You know, they just have a portrait of him. And then on one quarter of the screen and three quarters of the screen is where they have the video that you can watch. So I really, you know, wanted to just kind of break down and see what he saw. Cause you know, I hadn't really watched that much film of Jordan Love when he was in college. And it was pretty fascinating. And you could definitely see what he liked. I mean, you just see, especially from his sophomore year when he threw 32 touchdowns and like six interceptions. I mean, you just see these balls that you're like, wow. I've seen that a few times from him in Green Bay, but he was far, far more consistent. You can just see how powerful he was. His throws were, you know, a couple things stood out to me, and Gutekunst talked about this a lot. They really liked his arm, and he kept calling it a loose arm. And I kept trying to get what do you mean by that? And he's like, well, you know, he's got the ability to, he's got this massive hand, 10 and a half inches hand, which is bigger than Favre's, bigger than Rodgers. And he can stretch his arm out, you know, to where it's over, the ball is over 7 feet off the ground. So he can throw over any lineman. And he just has this ability to whip it out of his hand, and it comes out fast and it comes out hard, and it can be very accurate too. And then, you know, I said, hey, you got to put on negative plays because we can't just sit here and go over all his great plays. So we went over a whole bunch of his interceptions, and he had some really bad interceptions. He threw some balls right to guys in the chest, like he didn't see them, or he was trying to make a play like we've seen in Green Bay, where he tries to make a play like off his back foot. You would see that, and he's just throwing it up there, and you're wondering what the heck he's doing. So you saw that, but it was pretty fascinating to see that. He showed me film of him at the combine where they take video of him in his underwear and he has to stand there and then he has to turn around and they talk about the musculature in his body. And he's like, you know, we saw him, we thought he could put on another 10 pounds, be really strong. They showed him gripping the ball and it's like a close-up of him gripping the ball. And so he's got it and you can just see the massive spread on his hand. And then they showed he had a really good combine workout. And so he showed me some of that tape. And then we just talked about, you know, when they drafted him, I'm like, you know, so they weren't, at least from what he said, they weren't 100% sure they were going to take him. You know, they really liked a couple of the receivers ahead. And San Francisco jumped in front of them. You know, they moved up and then San Francisco jumped in front of them to take Brandon Ayuk. And at that point, I think most of the receivers they wanted were gone. So they were just, they took Love. Now, they might have taken Love anyways. I'm not sure. But I asked them, so were you guys like all high-fiving in the room and you know, celebrating? And he's like, no, I was in my living room. You know, it was COVID. I've totally forgot that. He was there with, they cleared out his entire living room and put a bunch of TVs in there. And the only people who were allowed in was Doug Collins, the security director, and Mike Urbach, who's the IT guy. So it was Gutekunst, Tim, and you know, and the two other guys and nobody else. And then everybody else is like on a video screen. So it was kind of surreal. Not like it'll be on Thursday when they make their first pick, when they're all the scouts are in that room and they can communicate freely. And so it was kind of interesting to just get his viewpoint, and you can see why he was sold on him. He said, you know, they got on him early. National Football Scouting, which is the service they use to identify pre-draft guys, like when they're sophomores, they'll start writing reports. Well, they identified Love pretty early. He likes to evaluate all the quarterback prospects. And so they said, well, you know, let's go see him. And John Eric Sullivan went and saw him in play LSU. And they got absolutely crushed 42-6. You know, LSU went on to win the national championship that year.
Yeah.
They were all over him. I mean, just, you know, he could barely get the ball off. But you could see he made some plays. He got picked off by Derek Stingley, but it was like a really nice play by Stingley. He got picked off by Grant Delpit, and that was the guy ripped the ball out of his receiver's hand. Delpit ripped the ball out of receiver's hands. Should have been a long gain. He caught LSU substituting and hit a 33-yard bomb to them against them. So there were things, even though he, you know, the rest of the tape, he think he threw for 130 yards. They're just these things you could pick up. And he said those are the things they kind of picked up on, was, you know, all these things. And the last thing, and I thought this was pretty interesting. He showed an interception against BYU where he just got drilled in the back and the ball fluttered up down to about the 8-yard line. They were on about the 38 and it got picked off. And I mean, he's just flat on his face on the turf. And then you see the guy returning it. And then within, you know, like about 10 seconds, all of a sudden here comes Love. And he chased him all the way down to the 25 and ripped at the ball and popped it out. The guy recovered it before it hit the ground. But they said that was like a big check mark for his character. You know, he mentioned another quarterback who I promised I wouldn't say. He said, take a look, you know, when that guy throws an interception, he just walks to the sideline, you know. And he said, so this was part of the character that they really liked about him. So
can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Because what's fascinating about this, other than the fact that it's incredibly detailed, and like you said, not just the good place, but the bad place too. What's fascinating about this is that this is obviously the draft, and the draft is about one thing. It's about quarterback, right? Every year, including this year. I mean, Cam Ward is the presumptive first overall pick to the Tennessee Titans this year. And the Packers have this mold of drafting their guy before they need their guy, letting him sit, letting him develop, taking a few years. Then, and it's a mold that perhaps we've seen the rest of the league start to kind of catch on to. The Atlanta Falcons last year with Michael Penix, right? When you dug through all these plays and you put on the scouting cap, do you get an idea of how beneficial those 3 years were for Jordan Love in an alternative universe where it wasn't the Green Bay Packers with Aaron Rodgers who drafted him, where he didn't have to sit? He might have played, might have been thrown to the deep end really, really fast right away perhaps. How different do you think that might have been?
Yeah, absolutely. Two things. Gutekunst said, you know, he had been trained that if you have a chance to get, you know, a franchise quarterback, don't pass it up, because it's not going to come, especially if you're consistently drafting in the 20s, as they have been. The other thing was he kept saying, or he pointed out, he's like, well, look at San Francisco. They traded 3 first round picks or whatever for Trey Lance. That's how much they thought they a franchise quarterback meant. They were wrong, but you know, they were willing to do it. The thing he kept saying, and you know, in the tape as we're watching it, is like, remember, he's 19 years old. You know, he's only 20 years old here when he's making these throws. He's like, he didn't come from a big high school program. He played as a freshman. You know, started the second half of the year. He had 2 different coaches, 3 different coordinators. He said, you know, he would say this is stuff he's got to learn. He's got to learn not to throw in this situation. He said, I think he would have failed. I think he would have definitely failed if he had to play right away. And I'm sure that came into play in when they drafted him, that, okay, he's not ready to be, he's not Justin Herbert, who was in that draft class. You know, he hadn't played big time games, you know, as Oregon had all that year, or Joe Burrow, who was in that class. Even Jalen Hurts was in that class. And, he had played at Alabama and Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Jordan Love was playing against New Mexico State and San Jose State, and you know, he'd get a good game every once in a while against a really top opponent, but no way was he ready to play in the NFL. And I think that's a great point, that he would not have a chance if he had to play right away. I believe.
I guess what's really fascinating to me, just even hearing Spoon, how detailed it was, like you said, just here, like they have a picture of his hands on a football. Like they want to know every little thing they can about this guy. So I'm really interested in did Gutekunst kind of dive into the feeling leading up to picking Jordan Love? Like, did he feel pressure? Did he feel stress? Because even for me from afar, when I saw the draft, I'm like, Jordan Love? I'm like, Aaron Rodgers isn't done playing yet, and he still looks like he's pretty good. That was just even my thoughts when I was watching. So a guy, like you mentioned, at Utah State, you know, wasn't like some, you know, hugely, you know, highly touted guy. Did Gutekunst, did he kind of dive into, like, oh, yeah, I felt it, I heard it, even though he was in his living room during COVID?
Yeah, he did, and, you know, he explained how they had signed Rodgers, and when he got there, he fully expected him to play until he was 42 years old. You know, he thought they had him at one point. They had him under contract for 8 years, and or they would have him if they franchise him, whatever. That he easily could play. They could have the rights to him till he was 42, and so they didn't go into that year, I don't think, with the intention of drafting Jordan Love. But I think they, as they went through the process, And then they saw, okay, here's a guy that will be available to us and could be a future franchise player. You know, do we do it? And then he said he and LaFleur sat down and they went through all the, you know, pros and cons. Is it worth it? You know, do we take the shot now? Can we wait? You know, what is, you know, what's the reaction going to be? How is it going to be, you know, play out for us on the field? And, you know, they came to a meeting of the minds that it was the right thing to do if it came about. I think, you know, I think I think part of the thing that might have helped him is that it was the COVID year. He was isolated, you know, and I'm sure he's not on social media, which is where all the crash of criticism came from immediately. I mean, I think he knew there would be reverberations, but he didn't have to go to the atrium like Ted Thompson once did and got booed mercilessly when what pick it was early in his tenure. You know, he had to go explain it to people in the atrium and they were just all over him, you know, so he didn't have to do any of that. He sort of made that pick in a vacuum. And I think maybe that gave him the, you know, the guts to do it. Although, you know, like I said, they had agreed, okay, if it happens, it happens, and we're ready to do it.
It's just so much there and so many interesting things. And again, if you haven't read this, y'all, please take the time to read it. You will enjoy it. Just a lot of great stuff from Spoon.
And the last part is, you know, the last part is how much they're really counting on him. I mean, they got to be right. You know, we've seen that he can do some of the things he did on college tape. They weren't wrong about that. But we haven't seen it done on a consistent basis or for an entire season or for him to, you know, vault a team, get it on his back and take it with him. He kind of did that at the end of the 23 season. But, you know, for a whole year and consistently year to year, that question is still out there. You know, is he that guy? Is he a franchise quarterback? And I think, you know, now we know that why they believe that, but now it still has to happen.
The thing that strikes me as you go through the whole timeline of events is for all the diligence that you can put into preparation, sometimes you also need to get a little lucky. And I think that that's a big part of this whole draft equation, to not go into 2020 looking to get a quarterback, to think that you can have Aaron Rodgers until 42 years old. Now we have the benefit of hindsight, right? Aaron Rodgers' last great year in the NFL was 2021. It was 2 years after. Mm-hmm. He was not very good in 2022. He was injured in 2023. Last year, you all saw what happened with the Jets. Now he's a free agent, right? Before 42. There's some benefit. It really couldn't have worked out much better than it did because you had the double whammy of drafting Jordan Love, pissing off Aaron Rodgers to the point where he put forth two immaculate MVP-type seasons. Then age hit, as it does for every player, right at the time, prematurely from what you're saying, that Brian Gutekunst was thinking going into 2020, earlier than he expected, but right at the time that Jordan Love was ready to ascend into that role, and it could not have overlapped better than it did. So sometimes you also need to be a bit lucky when it comes to the draft, especially at the quarterback position.
Yeah, sure. And it puts you in a situation too where, like last year, you know, you're not scrambling to get a quarterback. So, yeah. You know, you traded Rodgers and, we don't have anybody. You know, and then all of a sudden you're trading a fourth for Malik Willis instead of a seventh to just, hey, let's take a flyer on a guy because we already have a guy. So we'll take a flyer on Malik Willis, you know, and that ends up panning out, you know. So you got to have a quarterback. You just have to have a quarterback. And that's why we're going to see Cam Ward be the first pick in the draft. And he's 6'1". He throws from his shoulder. He's a good player, you know, but he's not Joe Burrow, or he's not Patrick Mahomes, or
none of those guys.
Jaden Daniels. He's not that guy. But he's going to be number one because Tennessee doesn't have a quarterback. So, you know, if you can get one at 26 like they did, I think in the end that turns out to be a pretty good pick.
Makes sense. And this is me obviously just spitballing, but it's also kind of jumping into some of the draft, looking at this season. As of now, the Packers have 8 picks, not as much as 11 before or 13 or anything of that nature. And obviously there's a lot more pressing needs in terms of looking at corners, receivers, and D linemen. But they've also always liked to have quarterbacks in the ranks. You know, they tried Michael Pratt. They tried Sean Clifford. When you look at going into this draft, if they only have 8, and I'll ask this for you, Spoon, do you think they might be more conservative in how they would pick, or do you still think they might try to find maybe a late quarterback to just kind of have in the woodworks? You know, I guess this is obviously you're not in the rooms or in the GM rooms, but, you know, do you think there might be some conservatism there?
I think there's less of a need for it, because they do have Sean Clifford, and they have another year of Malik Willis under contract. And that experiment turned out pretty good. You know, I still think if they can showcase Malik Willis in training camp, there's a chance they could get something for him at the trade deadline or before. You know, I mean, they should be trying to do that. That's, you know, that was the old philosophy when Wolf would draft Mark Brunell and Ty Detmer, and he got a third round pick for Mark Brunell. You know, he got a fourth round pick for Aaron Brooks. Matt Hasselbeck, he traded and was part of a first round, moving up in the first round. So I could see him maybe, taking somebody just in case he has to deal Willis or wants to deal Willis. But I don't see it being very high. I just don't. I think they're in a good spot, and maybe they'll just go free agent that way. I think they need to absolutely just double up on positions of need, you know, take a couple of defensive linemen, take a couple of corners, you know, take a couple of wide receivers, and then fill out whatever else they need.
That definitely makes sense. And that's one thing I'm curious about, you know, how many in terms of those picks, like how many positions will they fill? Because last season it was 11 picks, 3 offensive linemen. So I'm wondering that when going into this season, how many of those guys will be interior and edge guys? How many corners? How many receivers? Because, I mean, there's definitely some options out there from corner, D tackle, and even at receiver. And there's a bunch of names. And obviously we have plenty of stories on some of those names. And I'll just ask for both of you guys, you know, maybe I'll start with you, Ryan. Has there been a name or anything that you've heard that you've been intrigued by, or maybe in specific, just a position group you're looking at, what gets filled for the Packers?
Well, I think that it'd be a very big surprise if he didn't load up on defensive line. What we know about Brian Gutekunst is that he likes to load up at positions. You mentioned the offensive lineman last year. Let's not forget that he drafted 3 safeties, and that was after signing Xavier McKinney. True. He's loaded up at receiver. He loaded up at tight end. He took Tucker Kraft 1 round after drafting Luke Musgrave in the 2nd. He likes to load up at positions, and this draft, the position to load up on, which just, oh, by the way, happens to be their biggest need, is defensive line. And I'm talking interior and edge, pass rush. If you weigh 305 or if you weigh 280, if you're an edge or you're an interior, if you can rush the passer, the Packers need to draft you. That's where they're at with their pass rush. And it's all starting from there. You know, receiver, yes, they need to address that position. Corner, they need some depth there. But if they don't fix their pass rush, if they don't really add juice there, that's a disservice to this roster that views itself with championship aspirations. Well, who did they just lose to? They lost to a team that won the Super Bowl because of the pass rush. But Saquon Barkley, yes, he was a big deal as well in Philadelphia. But that pass rush harassed Patrick Mahomes. They made Patrick Mahomes look pedestrian. Patrick Mahomes is not pedestrian. That's what a pass rush can do for you. This Packers pass rush is not that. So however they go about it, whoever they tab as that's a guy that can get after the quarterback, whatever body type, whatever position, interior, edge, that doesn't matter. Can you rush the passer? If so, that's who they need to draft.
Yeah, it's been interesting hearing so many names that have been thrown out there, and names that we've talked about, from Kenneth Grant and Mykael Williams and Derek Harmon, Donovan Ezeraku from Boston College, you know, who played with Jeff Hafley. And but then there's been some corners and guys that have just been out there. But one name that's been interesting to me as well, though, he's a receiver, it's a Torian McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona. Obviously, the Packers don't draft receivers in that first round, and but there's been a lot of buzz and hype about this guy. But for you, Spoon, has there been, is there a position that you're looking at, or, you know, how shocked would you be if they went with a receiver in that first round?
Yeah, I'd be really shocked, because they just don't do that. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know that there's anyone special in at the receiver position. McMillan is tantalizing, but he's not, you know, Randy Moss. He's not a 4-4 guy. You know, he's tall, and he's made some, you know, is really good in contested balls and stuff like that. But is he special? And I think their record of being able to get good wide receivers in later rounds tells you, okay, if it's not a special class of wide receivers, then don't do it. You know, the specialty is defensive line. You have to be really dumb to not come out of this draft without, if you're the Packers, without a couple defensive linemen. If that's the strength of the draft and that's, you know, an area of need, man, you got to come out with two or three guys who can help you. You know, they do have talent there, and, you know, they need the Devontae Wyatts and the Colby Woodens and guys like that to Kyle Brooks. They have some talent there. But, you know, if they can add two or more, boy, you never know. Now, a big question that I keep thinking about, and I remember asking Gutekunst about this at the Combine, is what exactly is an edge rusher for them? So is, you know, like James Pierce, I think he's like 241 pounds. Can they play with him? You know, in Hafley's 4-3, where they really count on their ends to play the run. You know, Gary is what, 265? Van Ness is 270.
And Igari
is like 260, maybe more than that. You know, can they play with that type of edge rusher, or is it worth drafting a guy who's just a, you know, third down pass rusher? I think that's an interesting aspect. One thing I just kind of looked, because we talked to him at the Combine, and then of course the connection with Hafley was Ezeraku. And I was just looking at his numbers, and I'm like, boy, he sort of, as I looked at him, I was like, okay, the Packers functioned with Clay Matthews as a smaller end. He was a 3-4 outside linebacker, but, you know, they sometimes condense down into four. And I started looking, and like, okay, let me compare. And I was shocked. They are the same body, exact same body. Ezeraku has a little bit longer arms, but speed was the same, strength was the same, height was the same, arm, hand size was the same. And I'm like, well, okay, if you put Clay Matthews, and I'm not saying he is Clay Matthews, but if you put Clay Matthews in this defense, could he succeed? I think you would say yes. I think they could succeed with a 247-pound guy. So I don't see them, you know, really going for a speed rush guy, but I think they can go for someone like an Ezeraku who's, you know, borderline, you know, he's 245 pounds, something like that. As long as he's not 230, I think they can use an edge rusher.
Yeah. I think what helps them is that this group of defensive ends did defend the run very, very well last year. They were a big part of why this was the number 8 run defense in the NFL. In a way, I mean, one year to the next, 23 to 24, the way that they set an edge last year was drastically better. So they've got guys that can do that. What they don't have is guys that can get after the quarterback near enough. right? So that's why I say that that's got to be the priority. As far as McMillan goes, most of the time when you see a 40 time, it's pretty true. You know, that's why they test, but not always. And I've lost track of how many times over the years the Packers have come in after the after drafting a guy and saying, no, this is our 40 time with them. So always keep in mind that the 40 time we see is not the 40 time the team has. And specifically, the most famous example of that, this is long after Davante Adams became Davante Adams. This is long after he became the best receiver in the NFL, which he was at a time. And at this time, he was an all-pro, a guy who is, you know, thinking long-term about a potential Canton track. And it still burned him. I don't remember exactly if this was like after a game in Chicago or when this was, but it still burned him inside that he was considered a 4-5 guy. And he said flat out, I'm a lot faster than a 4-5 guy. I'm a 4-3 guy. That's the time on him. It was 4-5 coming into the draft in 2014. But anyone that's ever watched Davante Adams run a route knows that he's not a slow guy. Speed's not an issue with him. And it burned him even after he established himself to the level that he did. So I'm not saying, look, McMillan, he might be a 4-5 guy. That might be a reason why he doesn't become a superstar in this league. It very well might. I'm not saying it's not. But always just keep that in mind. The Packers, what they think is going to ultimately how they time him, what they think of his speed, will determine whether or not he's a guy that's worth taking there or not.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of what Xavier McKinney. He talked about that as well because he got a lot of criticism for his 40 time, and he's like, "I'm not slow. Like I have no problems." Go ahead, Spoon.
Well, I was just going to say Davante Adams was a 4.32 guy in the first five steps.
Right.
And then, I mean, after that, then he was a 4-5 guy. But
right.
He was so good off the line of scrimmage that it didn't matter if he was 4-4. You know, he destroyed guys. It's the same, you know, Greg Jennings was not a 4-5 guy. A 4-4 guy. Jordy Nelson was not a, you know, low 4-4 guy. It sometimes it comes down to route running and it comes down to quickness and, you know.
10-yard split.
Yeah. And so you have to definitely take that into consideration. Now, it helps if you got a 4-3 guy. I mean, Christian Watson, the reason why he's special is because he's 6'4 and he runs a, you know, 4.3 40. Yeah. Now, you know, he can't stay healthy, but, you know, he would be really special if they could keep him healthy. I don't know what I think they'll go later with a wide receiver, but they definitely need to take one. I think they should be eyeing one in the second round.
That's true. I mean, there are definitely some options, not only whether it's McMillan or Isaiah Bond or Matthew Golden. But that's interesting because there's guys like McMillan that has the size, but maybe not necessarily the speed. But then Golden and Bond and some of those other guys, they have the speed and the route running, but not necessarily that size. So whatever route the Packers go with receiver, I'm curious what they're thinking of, speed, size, or what have you. So
I know Golden gets knocked for not much run after the catch. You know, not a ton of big plays, but boy, I watched every catch he had. I just got kind of interested in him. Mm-hmm. He would be a beautiful fit in their offense, I think, even though he's 5'11". But, I mean, they don't have a – Jaden Reed's not a 4-3 guy. He's really good at getting open, but he's not a 4-3 guy. And what they could do with him, I think, in that offense would be really intriguing. I don't know that they're going to get a shot at him, and I don't know that they would take a receiver in the first round. But, you know, if for some reason he did and they took him, I wouldn't be totally shocked.
Dominic, you're talking about what kind of receiver – they might be into. And I think it's equally fascinating what kind of, assuming they take an edge rusher at some point, which I would be shocked if they don't, what kind of edge rusher do they take, right? Because we know, we have a very clear idea of what the blueprint is for Brian Gutekunst when it comes to edge guys. He likes them bigger I know he said in his Monday, in his pre-draft press conference, he didn't look at RAS, all right? But if you just look at who he's drafted, he likes them big with high RAS scores. That's what he likes. Yeah. Well, you want to help me with the Boston College kid, his name.
Azarouk, Ezeraku.
Ezeraku. And I might have to learn how to spell that very soon, because he's not necessarily that kind of guy, but his production, right? He led the league. He led the country in sacks last year. He's played for Jeff Hafley. Is it time to go that way? Or do you go with a Shamar Stewart out of Texas A&M who has more of that twitchy, high RAS, those type of traits? You know, if history is any indicator, it's more of a Shamar Stewart. Yeah, that's what Brian Goodkins does. But I think we'll see.
I think they need a skilled pass rusher. I think they've got all the other type of guys, big guys, you know, Gary Power guys, Van Ness. They don't have a guy who's a skilled pass rusher. Like, you know, Ezeraku is a skilled pass rusher. Pierce, Mike Green, those are skilled pass rushers. They don't have that type of guy, and I think they really need it. Shamar Stewart is not a skilled pass rusher. He's just an athlete. You know, some of the other guys, you know, I think there will be some guys later that, you know, we just know the first rounders, but they've pulled some pretty good guys out of the second, third, and they're supposed to be starting type talent all the way through the third and maybe fourth round on the defensive line. So it'll be interesting to see.
That skilled pass rusher, that would be a break from that blueprint with Brian Gutekunst. Lucas Van Ness was not a skilled pass rusher when they drafted him 13th overall. He was huge and very athletic. Played big. That's what they liked. Mm-hmm. He did not have the repertoire. Rashawn Gary, same way. That's why you watch Rashawn Gary his first training camp in one-on-ones. He destroyed people. We didn't see it for a couple years in 11-on-11 because he had to add the repertoire. They drafted him 12th overall because he was huge. And he was highly, highly athletic. So I'm with you, Spoon. I think that makes a lot of sense, but it's also a break from what Brian Gutekunst has done. It's a clear departure.
It's true. And at the combine this year, Ezeraku, he was the one guy that intrigued me the most because, you know, I see Mykael Williams come to the podium. You see it, you know, Georgia boy, you know, played SEC football and what have you. And then Boston College in the ACC. Yeah, they play Clemson. They play some, you know, good opponents, but you don't always see it maybe on that bigger scale. And then you see his size, like, you know, he's fit and he's built, but like you said, he doesn't just like overpower you. But then you see some of that skill that kind of comes out there. Again, it's a fascinating pick. I'm curious of, if not even the Packers, where this guy ends up and what could come of it. And it would be kind of funny if maybe a year from now, we see maybe if he went to a different team and blew it up and we could think about this podcast, which happens each and every year. There's always those guys.
Oh, no question. So. Yeah. And, you know, there are other guys sort of like him. Like, you know, there's that kid, Scorton from Texas A&M, who's a similar type player, you know, edge, not ranked as high, but, you know, second round could be someone that, you know, they look at, you know, there's other guys, Landon Jackson from Arkansas, you know, they're just some edge guys that, you know, they have to consider. They have to find somebody who can get after the quarterback. I mean, really, who is skilled in that way.
Yeah. And we can kind of segue into this point to wrap it up, even though we've talked a lot about these guys. And I guess in closing, something that really stood out to me with Gutekunst's comments, he's not so much putting pressure on a rookie to come in and make an impact, which again tells me heading into 2025, he's going to have more eyes on the returners and what they do. And I guess how would this be? And like, if this is going to be a successful season, it's more of what Jordan Love and the rest of those guys do, not so much pressure on the rookies, but I'm still interested in how some of those guys will contribute. Closing words, Ryan, and then Spoon, just, you know, thoughts as we prepare for this week.
I read that statement that he made as he's looking for a special player with high-end potential, and he's willing to wait for development if that's what it takes, which, oh, by the way, to tie a knot on this, is what he did with Jordan Love, right? He and Spoon's made this point, so I don't want to steal his thunder here, but he's right. They need special players. That's what they need. And ideally, you get it at a position of need, a special receiver, a special pass rusher. That's what they need. This is a roster that has a very, very high floor. There is a lot of solid to good players on this roster right now. Where they need help is raising that ceiling. They need to raise the ceiling of this roster. They need to add more special talent. And the good thing a high floor gives you is that patience. Because you got guys right now, pretty much every position, go out there, give you adequate quality play. You have that on this roster. It is a good team. So you're not looking for a guy that comes in right away and can help rescue. You're not the Tennessee Titans. You're not going to get Cam Ward and just hope and pray. That's not what you're doing. You're looking for that guy that can be special. Edrin Cooper last year, right? He had his special moments. He's a special player, but it's not like week one he came in and he was NFC Defensive Player of the Week. It took time. That's what this roster needs, is more of those type of guys, and we'll see if they can go about doing that.
Spoon, any kind of final words?
Yeah, I sort of believe that their success won't be dependent on the draft. It's going to be dependent on the last three drafts. And, you know, you really think about it, the core of their team, I mean, I don't know how many starters, I think it was 16 or something, our draft picks, but, you know, they need Zach Tom to become an all-pro. They need Dobbs to, you know, have a big year. They need Sean Ryan to solidify a guard spot, Watson to get healthy, Devontae Wyatt to be a sack guy, you know, take the next step, Quay Walker to take the next step. They've got all these guys, you know, Tucker Kraft should be way better this year. Jaden Reed, you know, they should get something out of Musgrave. Evan Williams, we know they're really high on him. Can they get anything from Marshawn Lloyd? Javon Bullard should be a better player. Cooper should be a star. You know, can they get something from Jordan Morgan? Those are the guys really to be focused on. I think that if they get, you know, another guy like a Cooper who could help them, or even an Evan Williams like type guy who could come in and compete for time, maybe a corner, maybe at defensive line, I think they'll be okay. I think where they're going to be, what will determine whether they're going to be a Super Bowl team, number one is Jordan Love, and number two are those guys I just mentioned who are in their second, third, and fourth years, that's what makes up your team. So, you know, the draft is really for the future. And if you get something this year, boy, you're really thankful.
Yep. And that's a great way to end it. So get ready. It starts Thursday, 7:00. The NFL draft is in Green Bay, a historic moment. It's going to be very fascinating to see what this city looks like starting Thursday. And then it wraps up on Saturday. So, let's get some sleep for now, and let's get ready for it later on this week. And we thank you all for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Tom Silverstein, Ryan Wood, I'm Dominique Giddings.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hey Columbus, it's Bill and Jenny.
At Simple Bath and Kitchen, we're all about making your new bathroom or kitchen absolutely beautiful.
With our renovations, we can help you age in place comfortably while still enjoying a newly updated and modern bathroom or kitchen.
From grab bars to accessible showers, we know how to make your space safe and functional for years to come.
Because your home should adapt to you, not the other way around.
If you're ready to invest in your future comfort, come chat with us at Simple Bath and Kitchen.
Simple Bath and Kitchen, where our home is your home.